right after the international news.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, July 4th, 2023. South Sudanese authorities force internally displaced persons from a UN camp in Unity State.
There is a peace across the country, across the United States in particular, or between Court Mayandit and Lair. We settle all those issues. Everybody is in his home or her home.
And a doctor in Sudan says hospitals in the country are at the verge of collapse.
We are working in extremely complex conditions due to the hospital location. Being very close to clash sites, we hear gunshots and shells, which sometimes.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Fierce battles broke out on Tuesday across Omdurman, the western part of Sudan's capital, as Amnesty International called for neighboring countries to help provide safe passage for those fleeing the conflict. The call comes as the army today tried to cut off supply routes used by the paramilitary rapid support forces to bring reinforcement into the city. Witnesses told Reuters there were ground battles in several parts of Omdurman and posted footage showing pilots ejected from a fighter jet allegedly shot down by the rapid support forces. There was no immediate response from the army. Amnesty International is calling on countries along Sudan's border to provide refugees immediate access to asylum registration. It says states should not deny access to those lacking travel documents or visas. And Amnesty criticized authorities for setting up roadblocks and checkpoints where those seeking to leave have been detained or harassed. Since the conflict began, over 550,000 Sudanese have left the country, including 250,000 Sudanese who have crossed into Egypt, 120,000 into Chad, and about 130,000 into South Sudan. The UN Refugee Agency has asked for $565 million in support, of which only 13% has been funded. Still in Sudan, hospitals are approaching a breaking point as fighting rages on between Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces. Nabil Biagio reached Dr. Safah Ali, a medical consultant at the Saudi Maternity Hospital, the only maternity hospital in Omdurman where intense fighting is going on as the warring factions battle for control of strategic locations in the historical town. Sahar says the hospital is running out of supplies and her team is taking serious risks to perform C-section surgeries because pregnant women in Omdurman have nowhere to turn to.
We are working in extremely complex conditions due to the hospital location, being very close to clash sites. We hear gunshots and shells, which sometimes end up falling inside the hospital premises. This hospital is now the only working maternity hospital in Omdurman, so patients have no other way but to make it here, no matter how far, risky or dangerous it is.
We have reports that fighting took place near the Saudi hospital in Omdurman, like you said, which is one with the only hospital that's operational in Omdurman. How did the fighting impact your work at the hospital?
Yes, as I said, we work very close to clash sites. Thankfully, in Oshkosh, the road was safe today for patients to arrive. But yesterday, it was very tough due to the conflicting right outside the hospital, which eventually led to the death of a citizen and one of the cleaning workers of the hospital.
Tell me about medical supplies at the hospital. We know that a lot of hospitals around the country and in Khartoum are running out of supplies, and even doctors, like the hospitals, are not well staffed. Tell me about supplies and the staff you have at your hospital.
Unfortunately, equipment and consumables are about to run out due to high demand, despite the aid we have received from international organizations. We also need fuel due to power out gas. We are very thankful for people who helped us. There is a lot of organization which will help us in this situation, like Sabra, and some people help us to Munazamat, I think, help us to run out our work.
For the health system in Sudan not to collapse completely or break down, what is needed, what is urgently needed from the international community or from aid organizations? What is needed to stop this crisis?
I urge all international organizations around the world and Sudanese people living abroad to aid the hospital and send us donation as soon as possible in every way to stop the health system from reaching a point of collapse.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you very much. And we are very thankful for giving us a platform to speak about what's going on in Sudan. I also send my grateful to the entire hospital staff for continuing to work in such challenging times. Thank you very much.
That's Dr. Saha Ali, who is a medical consultant at the Saudi Omdurman Hospital. She spoke with Nabil Biyaji this past hour from the city of Omdurman. A non-profit called Project Hope says the health system in Sudan is on the verge of collapse. The group says it is sending £5,000 of critical medicines and medical supplies to Port Sudan. The president and CEO of Project Hope, Rabih Tabi, tells VOA's Carol Van Damme nearly two-thirds of hospitals and medical supplies in the capital Khartoum and the western region of Darfur have been destroyed or severely damaged.
We have health workers that are doing their best with no access to medicine or equipment and in a very insecure environment. So their mental health, as well as their well-being and their inability to help patients is really impacted them severely.
What has Project Hope, despite all those difficulties, what has Project Hope been able to do in Sudan?
We've been providing support to a local organization called NEDA. They've been providing mental health and psychosocial services, as well as counseling for victims of gender-based violence. But also, in addition to that, we're sending medicines to Port Sudan. And it is very important that the medicines don't get stuck in Port Sudan, that they actually make it to the clinics and hospitals that need it the most, because those doctors and nurses and health workers that are there, they need those medicines. There's nothing more difficult for a doctor or a nurse to see a patient that's sick that they could actually treat if they had the medicine and the equipment and the supplies, but their hands are tied and they see actually patients dying because of that.
Is delivering aid to Khartoum and Darfur still as dangerous as it was a few weeks ago?
It still is, especially with the violence, you know, erupting again. Access is very difficult. Obviously, we need a ceasefire. We need peace. The people of Sudan need peace. But in the absence of that, we need some, humanitarian corridors so we can access those populations in Khartoum, in Darfur, and other affected areas to make sure that they get the humanitarian aid that they need.
We've had a number of ceasefires announced before. Has there been a break in violence that was, measurable, and were you able to get those corridors started?
I mean, those corridors have gone on and off depending on the ceasefires. For example, we were hoping for a ceasefire during Eid al-Adha, but that ceasefire didn't hold, and violence erupted again in Khartoum, and access becomes really difficult, especially to hospitals and clinics that are in those combat-affected areas. But throughout the country as well, I mean, there's insecurity throughout the country. If you want to try to get anything into Darfur as well, even without fighting, logistically, it's, historically, it's difficult. You can imagine now with the fighting, trying to access Niala or Jenina in West Darfur and trying to get medicines and medical supplies there is very difficult.
Yeah. What is the situation inside those hospitals in El Jenina, in Darfur, in Khartoum?
The reports we've been getting is that the situation is dire. There's a serious lack of medicines and medical supplies. And we're seeing influx of, displacement internally within Sudan. I believe the latest number was about 2.2 million people displaced inside Sudan, and over 650,000 people have fled Sudan into neighboring countries.
That's Rabih Talbi, the president and CEO of Project Hope. He spoke with Carol Van Damme from Orney, Maryland. Sudanese authorities say conflict-related sexual violence is on the rise as the fighting in the country enters its third month. One official at the Ministry of Social Welfare says the number of sexual violence-related cases allegedly committed by the Rapid Support Forces in Khartoum and the Western Darfur region has increased. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Juba.
Sudanese officials say they are seeing an increase in reports of sexual assault in the nearly three-month conflict in Sudan. Suleyma Ishaq Al-Khalifa is the head of the department in charge of combating violence against women at Sudan's Ministry of Social Welfare. She says her office has documented an alarming incidence of sexual violence committed against women. Al-Khalifa says her office was able to identify 42 cases of rape in Khartoum, 25 in Niala, and 21 in El Jenina.
Most of the survivors within Khartoum had confirmed that the perpetrators are RSF forces. And all in Niala and in Jenina confirmed that the perpetrators are, all of them are RSF forces.
She says her office also documented rising cases of forced disappearances of women and girls and an increase in conflict-related sexual violence.
There's so many atrocities have been committed against civilians, but we don't have all these numbers due that most of the people who are service providers or protection committees has fled the whole area to Chad.
The UN says nearly 2.5 million people have been displaced in and out of Sudan since the onset of the conflict on April 15th. Al-Khalifa says women in their houses, IDB camps, and outside the country have developed psychological problems due to horrific things they have witnessed.
The trauma of the war made other women always expecting the worst. They don't have any kind of support. They have no protection. They have no immunity. Everyone could be went through and exposed to this kind of conflict-related sexual violence.
Last week, Muhammad Hamdan Dagalo, the RSF commander, announced the establishment of field corps headed by the Major General Assam Saleh Fidel to carry out investigations into claims of offenses allegedly committed by the RSF. Khalifa called on the warring parties in Sudan to respect women and provide them with safe passage to escape the confronting zones. This program contacted Izzat Yusuf, RSF's political advisor, for comments, but he did not respond. VOA also sent an email to RSF's spokesperson, who is yet to get back to South Sudan in focus. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Coming up, Americans celebrate 247 years of independence. Find out how after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
How can you change or maintain your country's reputation?
First of all, change the positions of the police officers and even in the army, because it's not well organized. There's a lot of corruption in it.
I would like to encourage the people around the country to maintain the good behaviors in the country. And when it is bad, maybe I would encourage them to copy from other countries which are doing good outside.
Unity anyway, unity. Cooperation among the nationals. It can promote our country.
In talking about the peace in this country, it would make people be more interested.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on plus one 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, plus one 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Authorities in Leer County of Unity State have closed down a temporary protection area for civilians and relocated thousands of internally displaced persons to their original villages. The County Commission of Leer says the camp was closed down to prevent the spread of communicable diseases and criminal acts. For VOA News, Leth Nyak Jok reports from Bantiu, Unity State.
Stephen Takiriang Dong, the Leer County Commissioner, say his office closed down the temporary protection area last week and relocated more than 200 IDPs to their original village. Takir say authority closed down the camp after they realized some residents were engaging in unlawful act, including ref.
There is a peace across the country, across Unity State in particular, or between Kot Mayandit and Leer. We settle all those issues. Everybody is in his home or her home. And then we come up with the solution. Those who are in the TP need to be relocated to their home.
Commissioner Takir say when the camp was open, official expects civilians to return to their home as soon as there was a political stability. An IDP who spoke on condition of animosity for fear of reprisal said the county authority forced IDPs against their will to leave temporary protection area.
Then as then today, and the situation is very terrible, because if you have been displaced from where you stayed before and you have been told you have to leave your area, so it is better for we now. So you may find one household, if you have relatives living or staying late on, maybe you may get many houses congested.
Galwa Jacob is a coordinator of the local non-profit of restoration. He say Leer County authority notified aid agency about a decision to close the camp.
It was supposed to be demolished in November 2022, but due to the engagement that was imposed by the government by the partners, and in particular of restoration and UNHCR, it was extended to March. And with that, when we realized that it won't be easy for the people or the vulnerable people that are living in TPA to get out of TPA within that short period of time, we went back for further engagement with the Honorable Commissioner for their county to at least give them enough time for them to prepare for their exit from the TPA.
Linda Tom, a spokesperson for the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, say UNMISS mandate on the Leer temporary protection site expired.
We're no longer there. That has to be the condition for the UN mission in South Sudan to basically take responsibility for that area and also for the people who are there.
Laer County Authority and UN agency established the camp in 2016 to protect civilians who fled their home due to violence. For BA News, I'm Lee Nyaja reporting in Bentiu.
Parades, picnics, and concerts will be held across the United States Tuesday as the nation celebrates the 247th signing of the Declaration of Independence, which signaled the American colonies' break with Britain. Richard Green shows us two very different celebrations of the annual holiday.
One of the wildest and strangest 4th of July events takes place at the famed Coney Island Amusement Park in New York City.
100 pounds, ladies and gentlemen.
Dozens of contestants from all over the world take part in Nathan's famous international hot dog eating contest. The title says it all. Contestants try to eat as many of the sandwiches as possible in just 10 minutes. Joey Chestnut, who set the world record in 2021 by eating 76 hot dogs in one sitting, is seeking his 16th title in competition.
I'm extremely lucky to be part of an amazing event like this. I really love to eat hot dogs. I love 4th of July, and I'm just happy.
Do you feel good after that?
Well, you know what? I feel amazing. You know, there's you can't feel really happy unless there's some suffering involved. And like eating this many hot dogs, it's not comfortable, but winning, eating in front of thousands and thousands of people on the 4th of July, it really makes it some of the best feeling I could ever have.
A more traditional celebration will be held in Washington, D.C., with the annual A Capital 4th concert on the National Mall. The nationally televised event will be hosted by television actor and presenter Alfonso Ribeiro.
I wanted to be involved because it really is an honor, right? It is a show that is a true honor to be able to host. We're celebrating America's birthday for the 43rd time for this show, but 247th birthday. And we have such a great group of artists and people that are involved in this show. But we're also going to have we're celebrating our military, our frontline workers. We have a hit from the International Space Station. It's a very, very cool show.
The show will end with a traditional fireworks display in the night sky over the Potomac River. Richard Green, VOA News.
Americans will be celebrating today's Independence Day throughout the nation with fireworks, parades, and parties. Nekita Ricks is a Liberian immigrant and a Colorado State Representative for District 40. She spoke to VOA about this Independence Day.
Thank you, James. Good morning and happy 4th of July to you.
Well, thank you very much. What are you doing for celebrating July 4th?
July 4th is a day that we celebrate, of course, our Independence Day. And as a state representative, I'm like sending out greetings and just looking forward to the day, probably getting together with my family members, and we're going to be doing some barbecues, picnics, and then probably fireworks tonight.
What does it mean when you hear the word July 4th?
I think July 4th for me, of course, is about the Independence Day and the birthday of America, this great country that we all live in. And I also remember that, it's an honor and a privilege to be serving my community as a new American. But I think we all enjoy the freedoms that America offers. And I also, think about, where I'm from and where I'm at now. And, the freedoms that were fought for here through the American Revolution, which was protracted, they were fighting against colonial rule and set up this great country. But then I also think about Liberia, where I'm from, right? And also the African Americans were fleeing slavery and the slave masters and looking to be emancipated and setting up a land of liberty. So I think about those similarities between the United States of America and also, Liberia, where I'm from.
Very interesting you brought the Liberia angle. July is also an important month for Liberia because I think instead of July 4th, Liberians celebrate July 26th. Could you tell us more about that?
So July 26th is Liberia's Independence Day. And Liberia is a small country in West Africa, of course, that was founded by African Americans who were seeking liberty and emancipation from their slave masters. They did not want to be under racism. They wanted to start a republic where they could be free, they could run a government that they could call their own. They also wanted equal rights and opportunities for all citizens, whereas, you know, at the time, as a freed slave, you would not have had the rights and opportunities as white Americans did. So, you know, I think about that and Liberia and the similarities between the two and the fact that Liberia was birthed out of America, you could say.
Here in Washington, where we are, besides the food, the barbecuing, the eating and cooking outdoor, there's also the idea of going to fireworks. What is it like where you are?
Yeah, and the fireworks, I think, symbolizes like maybe the celebration, of course, but then all the lights, maybe the war that was fought too. But the fireworks are going to be right in front of the state capitol here in Denver, Colorado. And we have a really beautiful view from the state capitol. And I probably will go there. Last year, I got to watch the fireworks with my family from the balcony. And that was such a really great privilege. I was there with other state representatives and some of their constituents. And even the governor was out there with his family. So it's really great. You know, I think we celebrate the freedoms that America offers us, the liberties, the rights, you know, and everything that this great country represents to all of us.
That's Nakita Ricks, a Liberian immigrant and a Colorado state representative for District 40. She spoke with James Batty from Aurora, Colorado. That's all we prepared for you on this Tuesday, which is an Independence Day here in the United States. We now leave you with Nanaya featuring Samini and the song Handkerchief.
Oh, da baby, na me da baby, oh, be a by you. Me say sorry, but do a honka, me da nim pasu. Me try shame who, shame who, shame who, ah. Come on, Jay, oh, Jay, Jay. Me say, una, una, da, un, Jay, one, pe, monka, wo, be, te, ya. Come on, mum, come on, de, be, ya. Into your knee, hoy, ama, me, chini, si, yo, ah. Into your money, me, handkerchief. Na, me, su, me, di, a, pe, pa. Oh, da, money, me, handkerchief.
Su, me, di, a, pe, pa.
We've been listening to Nanaya featuring Samini and the song Handkerchief. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Chang, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.